So we're here today. We've been working for about a year and a half on a set of research and a book called Make It So that's all around the intersection of science fiction and interfaces. So essentially it's a book on what can interaction designers learn from science fiction interfaces. And hopefully we'll get it out sometime in the spring of next year. But because of some of what we've been finding and because of this conference, we looked at a subset of science fiction, and we specifically looked at sex interfaces within science fiction and found some interesting things and not as many interesting things as we expected, which then led us to even more interesting things, and we'll get into that today. But just to ground some context of what we've been looking at is we did expand out from science fiction. For the book, we've been mostly looking at film and TV because we need a visual consistent interface to be able to analyze and to study. So we haven't been looking at books and text, and we haven't been looking at radio or listening to radio. We've looked at a little bit of anime, but in general, animation tends to be a little roughed up, so there's not the specificity we need in order to find lessons about interaction design. And then for the purposes of this talk, we've also expanded our search through pornography, and surprisingly, we haven't really found any pornography that does anything truly interesting with sex and technology. The typical kind of thing that you see in the porn world is things like Anal Intruders 9, where a pair of outer space aliens lands on Earth and plot to take over the planet, and their scheme involves having anal sex with every woman they find. So typical of sort of what's out there, and I think there's actually a real opportunity there, but of course, they're not interested in innovating the dynamic between sex and technology. They're just interested in titillating and doing so for probably as little money as possible. Surprisingly, however, we haven't found a lot of interesting things in the sci-fi world around sex as well. There's some very typical domains that get done over and over and over again, like sex bots, and we'll show you what we found and the most interesting parts of what we found, but there was surprisingly a lot less than we would have expected, considering how important sex is to our culture and how science fiction is really a reflection of our culture. We will put some notes online by the end of the weekend, so you don't have to take copious notes if you don't want, but if you go to nathan.com/EA, slash AE for Ars Electronica, we'll post notes with screenshots and things like that. And without further ado, we'll just jump right in.
So as Nathan mentioned, we're actually building on or looking at a subset of a larger set of research. So I'm going to really quickly introduce you to that research, and then we'll go dive into the sex stuff, and then we'll come back out again. So this is the principal model underneath sort of the stuff that we're looking at for Make It So. We're taking a look at the intersection of design and sci-fi, the subset of science fiction, which is principally like television and movies. And there are two main ways that design ends up influencing the makers of science fiction. The first is on an individual level. Some movie maker sees something cool, like the Cowden sculpture, and goes, oh, I can totally use that in my upcoming film. Sort of in a larger scale, design actually establishes the realities, the paradigm, that we all live in, that science fiction then seeks to extend. Okay. There are four ways, as you can see, that science fiction affects design. They are direct inspiration, again, where one of us sees something in science fiction and we think, wow, I could totally make that. And we go off and make that thing happen. It's also sets the expectations of the culture. It's the example that started this whole book, is the fact that communicators in the original Star Trek were those flip-open things. And 30 years almost to the month, later, when Motorola introduced its StarTAC cell phone, they used the exact same motion a very telling name in order to sort of build on that expectation. Wow, I'm actually in a science fiction movie with the cell phone. Two other ways that science fiction tends to sort of influence design is to remind us of the human context. Hey, we're humans. We're never really going to escape that, at least not in the conceivable near term, and then by actually establishing new paradigm. Hey, here is where technology might go if we do it right, sometimes if we do it wrong. So this is the model that we came to this subset of sex with. And we found three primary domains. When we just like went out there and looked we trolled through hours and hours and hours of television and science fiction movies, kind of aiming at the more popular stuff. And then we simply said, what do we see there? And we actually saw three things, three categories, but Rucker's presentation this morning makes me wonder if maybe we have four. I'll get to that in a second. But we mapped them all out into these three categories and then provided another axis where we said, okay, this technology is really tied to our bodies as opposed to the stuff you'll see at the top, which is this technology is really tied into our brain. So the first of those three categories is matchmaking. So let's go in and take a look at what we see there. Actually, there's not a whole lot. The first thing we're going to go and dive into is Logan's Run from 1976. And while we have clips for most everything we see here, I don't know if we've got the time to see it all, so I may skip some stuff, but this is really sort of beautiful and telling of its era. So let's go ahead and watch this little clip from Logan's Run. To set it up, Logan is a cop. You can think of him that way. And this is weird, me having to explain to this audience what's going on in the sci-fi flick, but just to make sure, Logan's a cop, and he is enjoying a night at home, and he decides he wants some sex. So what does he do? He walks over to a cubicle in the wall and dials it in.
The circuit.
Yeah, the circuit.
Oh, no.
The graphics are so wonderful.
So it's an interesting moment. Logan sort of looks and says, silly faggot, and then, like, redials. And finally he actually ends up, by happenstance, summoning the protagonist of the film, Jessica. He looks around, a little dazed. And then she steps off, literally, like, off into his room.
Welcome.
Now, one thing that's really marvelous for me is, like, I don't know if they ever thought about this from Jessica's perspective, but she just steps into a closet in her living room, and suddenly she's seeing other people's living rooms until somebody pulls her off. Like, when does she stop and say, I want to go home? Like, she doesn't have an interface. But anyway, whatever. The next step in this is actually where she flakes.
What's your name?
Jessica.
That's sad enough. You're beautiful. Let's have sex.
No.
Then why are you wasting my time, Why did you put yourself on the circuit?
I thought I had to do something.
Which is the lamest excuse for not having sex ever. but anyway, so this was matchmaking. It's the only really good example of matchmaking that we see that's sort of in a physical sense. Jessica's transported from room to room and then suddenly shows up at this place. The next place we're going to head up to is a kind of matchmaking, which is where you're specifying the exact partner that you want. In this case, we're taking a look at Total Recall, and I wrote down the names because I can't remember all the characters, but this is a Douglas Quaid. I kept thinking Dennis Quaid. He has gone to a service called Total Recall, which is kind of an entertainment vacation thing where they're going to implant memories directly into his brain. He's gone through an interview to kind of describe what he wants, but now he's sitting down actually in the chair where they will do the implantation, and the doctor needs some information from him. And this is just the worst.
I'll be asking you some questions, Doug, so we can fine-tune the ego program. If you answer honestly, you'll enjoy yourself a whole lot more. Your sexual orientation.
Hetero.
Yeah, me too.
So, how do you like your women? Blonde? Brunette? Redhead?
Brunette.
Slim. Athletic. Voluptuous.
Athletic.
Demure, aggressive, sleazy, be honest.
Sleazy.
Oh, nifty. Okay, you guys might be able to see the video better. Okay, so I'm going to end it there. There's a few more seconds, but Arnold's essentially matchmaking by just specifying the exact characteristics that he wants. So we saw something that was physical, we saw something that was purely virtual, ends up feeling real for him. You guys may know the movie. But here's an example where we sort of matured. We're now in 2005 and we're taking a look at the TV show Firefly. Inara is a courtesan on board a ship that flies between planets, and she actually has an interface that we see in one episode for taking applications for her time while she's on board a planet and then selecting a client with whom she will spend her time.
is limited, and if you've selected my proposal to hear, then the honor you do me flatters my honor, and I hope...
Now there's the smile made of sunlight.
Atherton, how wonderful to see you.
Did you get my...
It's actually ironic. Atherton ends up being a total dick. And in fact, he gets into a fight with Inara's erstwhile unfulfilled lover. And they get into a fight, and he curses her for a whore. Oh, and the interesting thing is that it kind of looks as if, you know, Inara's kind of at the...
I should have outreached you, I'm so no one else would want you.
See how I'm not punching him? I think I've grown.
Well, get ready to starve! I'll see to it you never work again.
Actually, that's not how it works. You see, you've earned yourself a black mark in the client registry. No companion is going to contract with you ever again.
You'll have to rely on your winning personality to get women. God help you.
So it's actually the only instance that we ever see of a collaborative filtering sexual interface in anything that we've seen in TV and film, so it's quite interesting.
There's some other examples. Obviously, so to begin with, there's not a lot here around matchmaking. We haven't seen a lot of exploration of this. We also have some clear parallels to some of the things that are going on today, right? So we have sites like Manhunt or Alt.com where it's very easy to create a profile and do filtering to sort of make your match, which is a more sexual component than just the sort of Match.coms and Chemistry.coms. Craigslist would be another way of doing this. And the specificity of details sort of is on a broad range of on detail. We also see objects software in this case. If you've ever seen iTrick, which is sort of a way of recording every sexual encounter with every person you've met through one of these services, so you can keep sort of a database of who was good and who wasn't, who did what, who agreed to what or didn't agree to what, et cetera. And it's actually an interesting sort of contact database optimized for sexual encounters, especially serial monogamous encounters. And it almost creates the sort of sex data fetish out of this ability to create, to keep and record and go back and look, sort of relive this hyper detail about your sexual encounter as if you wouldn't remember, or maybe you wouldn't. And we've seen a couple devices, this is sort of outside of the sci-fi world, but in tune with or informed by it. And so if you remember the Love Getty from several years ago, this was a device that was essentially a matchmaking product that you would enter in your preferences, and when you walked by or if you were at a party, you came into close proximity with someone that had compatible preferences, then the two would flash and you would make your match, etc. For the most part, all of these, especially even the science fiction rendered matchmaking services and things, are pretty unsatisfying, mostly because we don't get to see the specificity of detail that you get to enter in to make your match. Something like the Love Getty is interesting, but it's truly just a toy. You have three preferences total for your matchmaking ability, which, I don't know about you, but three preferences isn't going to do it for me to find my match. So we've seen explorations into interesting matchmaking, but the most interesting stuff is happening not in science fiction and not in sort of high-tech gadgetry, but it's actually happening online. There's things like recording and commentary, collaborative filtering, like Chris mentioned. There's escort rating sites where escorts rate or blacklist clients and share that information among themselves, exactly like what we see in the movie Serendipity or in Firefly. That was the TV show Firefly. But there's not much exploration here, and there's certainly not much that's differentiating itself from what's already happening in the real world. So this is sort of a deficient area where science fiction is not only not taking the lead, but it's not even doing much exploration. There are some obvious places where this can go, both in science fiction and in the real world, more collaborative filtering, sort of magic, real-time matchmaking, so a Love Getty on steroids that truly is going to make an interesting or essentially exciting or surprising match rather than, you know, matching you upon three criteria.
Right, and that maybe didn't feel like so deliberate, like you You glanced up, and you don't know why you glanced up, but it was really, you know, the room firing a small laser in your peripheral vision. Okay. So that was the first section, and like Nathan said, we didn't see a lot there. The second is actually where we see most of the stuff in cinema, and that's sex with technology. There's barely a human involved, and there is a ton of stuff. So we're going to dip down into the bottom again. We're going to take a look at this sort of physical aspect first. And what we've got, that little arc there, is a continuum between device-like technology and human-like technology. And we're going to head right into device-like technology.
Think of this as a scale of anthropomorphism.
Yep. So this is George Lucas's, I think it's his college project, isn't it, from 1971, called THX-1138, if you haven't seen the film. It's complete dystopia, and this particular scene is about two roommates, where the female roommate is deeply in love with her male roommate, and while they are supposed to have their sexual urges taken care of by the technology we see, you can see her swapping out her roommate's pills in the hopes that she will reawaken his passion. Red means don't pull out. No denouement. Like the minute that machine comes up, he's flipping channels, right? Just like a man. All right, so this device couldn't be more device-like. Yes, he's got this sort of hologram that sort of gives him the visual stimulation, but he's not even paying attention to it for most of the act. You know, sort of leaning back and just feeling the device. Sort of farther down on the chain, we have cyborgs of all sci-fi movies to pick Space Truckers from 1996. In this case, we have Cindy, who's the lead female protagonist, who has agreed to have sex with a horrible cyborg monster, Macanudo, I think his name is. And we're just going to see the first clip, but it's where he sort of reveals the body that he's created himself for the first time. Oh, and I'm sorry, she's agreed to have sex with him so that he will let her crew go.
I rebuilt everything. Every organ.
Oh, my video stuff. Okay. Here we go.
Low amp electrical wire pulse. Designed to drive women wild with pleasure.
Stop! You're gonna make me puke. Ella, quit talking or the deal's off, okay?
Sophomoric but effective. He ends up actually repairing it and mounts her, but she doesn't want to have any of it. It's actually kind of a fun movie. Of course, the cyborg that we sort of... Oh, did you want to...
Yeah, this is actually very typical of what we've seen in the sort of sex realm in science fiction, where sex is treated very mechanically. This is going to work. This is going to drive women mad because this device he's built, you know, driving women mad has nothing to do with what goes on in their heads. It's all about a bodily function. We'll see later. Well, we just saw in THX-1138, for instance, it's just this device. There's nothing emotional or sensorial beyond just the, you know, contact with your genitals, right? We'll see it in several other films moving forward that there's no connection to sex as an erotic experience. It's very often just treated as sort of mechanical experience. and in this case also, cyborg equals bad, right?
Right.
It's rendered as grotesque and ugly and scary, not as anything that could possibly be wonderful or interesting.
Which is a great contrast to the reimagined Battlestar Galactica from 2004, Caprica 6, I don't have a clip, but of course is this sex object who's not a sex bot, who's absolutely beautiful and stunning, and yep, we love her. So the next category of thing is all the way on the human-like sex continuum of sort of sex with technology. This is a whole set of things just about sex bots. Hollywood has loads of them, like too many for me even to show, and we had to pick sort of some to show. My favorite example is really this Buffy bot. If you're not a fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, or even if you are, you may be thinking, wait a minute, that's a fantasy show. But in fact, in 2001, the Buffy bot was introduced. Spike, who we see here, is a vampire in love with Buffy, and there is a technological nemesis who is able to create very human-like machines. And he has a Buffy bot built so that he can live out his sexual desires with her. To Joss Whedon's maybe credit, maybe damnation, we see that he's showing sexual technology as a thing for immature people. And here is the scene where he shows it breaking. Oh, darn it.
It'll pick up.
I try so hard to resist you, and I can't.
Yeah?
Darn your sinister attraction.
Are you afraid?
I don't want to restart, but it's going to keep going.
You know I can't bite you.
I think you can. I think you can if I let you. And I want to let you. I want you to bite me and devour me until there's no more.
Like this.
Oh, Spike, devour me.
All right.
Spike, I can't help myself. I love you.
You're mine, Buffy.
Should I start this program over?
Shh. No programs. Don't use that word. Just be Buffy.
What not to say during a trick. Okay. So that was Joss, and actually he sort of comes full circle because in Serenity 2005 we actually do see a sex bot who is Mr. Universe has married, which is, there's no judgment laid here, except Mr. Universe gets killed. I guess it's kind of a judgment, but not for the sex bot. And it seems to make him perfectly happy, but we're not going to see a clip. So sex bots in general, we see a ton of them. Here, if you remember Westworld from 1973, part of the premise was, of course, this immersive role play with the physical world, but the other part was sex. There was even a world, Roman world, which was built as sort of this fantastic orgy where you can let your dreams come true. And we even have an interesting subplot where one of the characters sort of meets a sex bot named Daphne, but this story is largely about a class uprising, so he doesn't really get Daphne. Of course, one of the earliest sex bots that we never see in action is from Blade Runner, Pris. She acts sexily throughout the thing, but we never see her, and we're told that she's a pleasure model, but we never see her, except when she actually ends up kissing Rutger Hauer, which is kind of a weird thing. Like, have we planned ourselves for robot-on-robot fetishes? Not yet. And of course, the whole question is the thing is whether Decker is a replicant himself, but he chooses in this scene to go ahead and have sex with Rachel, who is a known replicant. So again, more sex bots, and then if we think sort of it's something new, it's not really. I don't want to see the rest of that. All the way back in 1962, we had this horrible, horrible film called Creation of the Humanoids, where this woman is shockingly in love with and courting one of the blue-faced humanoids. And I love how she's a rebellious woman because she's a smoker. We also have lots of stuff from The Outer Limits. Valerie 23 is a sex bot. And Bits of Love was a really interesting push into technology, whereas the protagonist has an apartment, it's a post-apocalyptic apartment, but where throughout most of the apartment it's all sort of non-physical contact, right? He can interact with a whole host of characters, but in order to have physical sex, he's got to slip into this pod. And then, of course, things go horribly wrong, as they always do in The Outer Limits. There she is, sort of, she's passing from physical to real in this moment, isn't she?
She's basically holographic.
Yeah. But she's passing into that thing. Now, we're heading now to, this is sort of a humorous break, but one of my absolute favorite bits about sex and technology because it's dead on, of course, as Futurama often is. So Fry has woken up in the year 3,000, isn't it? Yes, 3,000. And in this case, the funny little rendering you see there is because he has gone onto the internet.
I'd like the 2003 model. Wahoo! I found her! What do I do now?
Download her. Let's just put a blank robot in the drive.
Worked.
You're one sexy man. Philip J. Fry.
Okay. He ends up sort of falling in love with the Lucy Liu bot, and when the other characters find out about it, they have to give him the dire warning. Since Fry didn't grow up in their time, he's actually has never seen the public service announcement, which they then load up and play for him. And this is actually sort of to the crux of one of the things that's wrong with sex bots. In a lot of pictures.
Ordinary human dating. It's enjoyable and it serves an important purpose. But when a human dates an artificial mate, there is no purpose, only enjoyment. And that leads to tragedy.
Neato, a Marilyn Monroe bot.
You're a real dreamboat.
Billy Everything.
Harmless fun? Let's see what happens next.
Billy,
do you want to walk your dog?
No, thanks, Mom. I'd rather make out with my Monroe bot.
Billy, do you want to get a paper out and earn some extra cash?
No, thanks, Dad. I'd rather make out with my Monroe bot.
Billy, do you want to come over tonight? We could make out together.
Gee, Mavis, your house is across the street. That's an awfully long way to go for making out.
Did you notice what went wrong in that scene? Ordinarily, Billy would work hard to make money with his paper route. Then he'd use the money to buy dinner for Mavis, thus earning a slim chance to perform the reproductive act. But in a world where teens can date robots, why should he bother? Why should anyone bother? Let's take a look at Billy's planet a year later. Where are all the football stars? And where are the biochemists? They're trapped. Trapped in the soft, vice-like grip of robot lips.
So, hitting this notion of sort of, once we have this ethics-free sort of sexual slaves, what's going to happen? We're going to become addicted. And a year later, the Earth is going to be destroyed. Okay, so we've taken a look at all of these physical sort of sex with technology, from devices onto sex bots, and we're going to hit more of the brain stuff with one of my favorites, which is a 22nd bit from Sleeper in 1973. Of course, this is a criticism of the way sex can become sort of, distance from its emotions. Let's just watch, if you've never seen it.
Oh, that was wonderful. I feel so distressed. I think we should have had sex, but there weren't enough people.
We'll use the orgasmatron.
That's a good idea.
Come on.
You know, I think that should be smelled with applause tonight.
So, that's the end of the orgasmatron. But it was a marvelous thing to put on screen in 1973, where sex could be something that was that casual and that quick. And arguably, we don't know what happens inside the little orgasmatron, but I'm putting it up in the brain stuff. Now, Nathan is actually more of a truckie than I am, so I'm going to give him this one.
So, sex with holograms, right, or sex on the holodeck. The interesting thing about Star Trek and how it's treated is it's treated as basically culturally okay. We see it show up in Deep Space Nine. We have hollow suites, and we all know why people rent the hollow suites, right? So for the most part, sex with holograms is treated as non-judgmental. What is sort of judgmentally treated is relationships or love, falling in love with a hologram. We see that in a couple different Trek series. And then we have these two instances from Voyager where, they're off way, thousands of light years away from the rest of the Federation, and what happens to the Vulcans who have to mate every 7 years or 5 years or whatever.
Ensign Borek, I'd like you to meet T'Pella. Surely you're not suggesting that she become my mate. Well, I wouldn't recommend a lifetime commitment, but she might be able to help you with your immediate problem. She's a hologram. She isn't real. Then I assume you have the same low regard for me. You're a skilled physician, doctor, but let me point out the limitations to your own experience with physical matters. I believe we're discussing your sexual difficulties at the moment, Ensign. And this holographic mate is the best solution I can think of. She won't be the same as a real mate. The difference is all in your mind. Which, if I've understood you and Mr. Tuvok correctly, is where the pond farm must ultimately be resolved. Let your mind convince your body that she...
So, the issue here is that there's a biological function that Vulcans have to mate, and apparently nobody's thought to test out holograms until now, but there's no other alternatives here on the Voyager ship, and it's seen as sort of culturally distasteful, plus a twinge of maybe it won't even work. In a later episode of Voyager, we see where it has been done, and in fact done successfully.
I am a married man. It's the holodeck, Tuvok. It doesn't count. Is that what you tell your wife? Oh, of course not. My days of rescuing slave girls from Planet 10 are history. Look, you have photographs of your wife, right? The computer can use them to create a replica. It wouldn't be breaking your vows if it's a hologram of your wife.
As it was in the dawn of our days, as it will be for all tomorrows. To you, my husband, I consecrate all that I am.
To Pell, my wife, from you I receive all that I am.
As it was in the beginning, so shall it be now.
Two bodies, one mind.
Vulcan sex is so hot. So we give, you know, we give Star Trek a lot of props for the most part treating this as completely acceptable. You know, Paris is even able to talk about, you know, his, you know, dalliances before he was married, although they won't look at each other while they're discussing the subject, so it's not completely normal or treated unjudgmentally. But we did see much more sophisticated discussions of sex and sexuality throughout Star Trek than we did through a lot of other sci-fi properties.
So two last bits on virtual sex with technology. The first one, I'm going to kind of gloss over a little bit. If you've seen The Matrix, you know that that occurs in a second world, which is entirely virtual. There is a famous clip where Neo, the main protagonist, is being introduced to this virtual world, and he meets the woman in the red dress, sort of as a lesson from Morpheus. But a little bit later, there's a tiny little bit of dialogue that Mouse delivers at the dinner table.
What did you think of her?
Of who?
The woman in the red dress. I designed her. She doesn't talk very much, but if you'd like to meet her, I can arrange a much more personalized meal here.
The digital tempered work.
So we get the hint there that yes, the matrix can be used, or this little sub-matrix, I guess, can be sort of used for sexual purposes, although we don't really ever get to go visit in any of the trilogy. The last bit about sex with technology is one of those sort of in-between technologies that I just love, because it pokes a hole both in our organization and really pushes the edge of what might be able to be done. This is Brainstorm from 1983, Natalie Wood's last movie. The central conceit of the film is similar to Strange Days, where you can wear headgear in order to record sensorial experience, and then someone else can put on a similar piece of headgear and play that sensorial experience back. This first clip, I'm not going to go all the way through it, but this is where the first test, like, what do you call this in marketing? Where you're doing... focus group testing of the device. And sort of the marvelous thing, a little later in the clip, you see people sort of leaning as they're having this experience, telling you that their body is really involved in this brain thing. Trouble comes when a couple of lab technicians decide to report themselves having sex.
You're crazy!
Come on, let's do
no.
it. Let's do it for science.
For science, sure, I can trust you. I'm not going to do it in here. Anybody can come in here.
Oh, no, Lillian won't be back tonight. I promise you, she won't be back.
You promise?
Come on, I promise. Come on, babe.
All right. sorry.
That was how easy it was to convince girls back then. So, problem is that this other guy in the lab is sort of becomes a voyeur to this tape, as many of the others do. But he actually takes the tape and splices it into a loop, and then just takes one of the devices home and sits, and he ends up sort of this slavering slave to the tape as it plays over and over again. Christopher Walken playing Mike comes in to find him addicted and twitching. Which is silly. We can put quick time on loops and none of this happens to us. Okay. But it's really interesting because the question of whether this is sex with technology or sex with someone else really becomes about the intention of the person who recorded it. Did she intend for him to see it? Because if not, then isn't he just having sex with this sort of voyeuristic thing and he's not really having sex with them? But if she did intend, if she's kind of an exhibitionist, anyway, it's a marvelous piece of tech.
The other thing is that we basically see much more variety and, again, sort of more interesting things happening in the real world. Just Thursday night we saw sort of more interesting devices here than the thing we saw in THX-1138, and certainly more sophisticated than we're seeing in science fiction. You've got, you know, the state of art of dildos and fucking machines, you know, of electrostim, things like the Thrill Hammer, the Sexbot 360, where we now can hook up our dildos to, you know, our Xboxes and use them as controllers, or the Oh My Bod, which is basically a dildo that connects to your iPod and sort of vibrates to the beat, right? So we're seeing a lot more interesting crossover and experimentation in the real world, specifically around, you know, in these communities, than we are in science fiction. And we, you know, part of that we think is because science fiction is really geared towards extending the present paradigms that people already understand. They need that basis of cultural context in order to build upon. And most of these things aren't in the mainstream, even to this day. Even though they're even on the market, they're not really part of the mainstream consciousness, and so they don't form the same kind of paradigm that science fiction can play off of. We have things like Real Doll, and we saw one instance of cybernetic sex parts. With all the cyborgs we've seen in science fiction for as many decades, only once have we come across anything to do with a cybernetic sex part, which is kind of unusual given the fetishism and the titillation that science fiction naturally shares with sort of sex and pornography, etc. In fact, one of the most interesting developments was Michael's what was the acronym on Thursday? I have it written down here somewhere. The ultimate arousal machine. There's four words actually for it.
The assault something is what it once called.
Yeah,
anyway,
exactly.
That thing.
Because this is now moving into an area that we're going to talk about in a second about augmented sex between two people. So it's not just the device that you might use by yourself, and those devices certainly exist, but now it's becoming more of a social device, and that becomes a much more interesting paradigm to talk about. Where can this go? We have consistently found, I said this yesterday to someone, and it sounded, I didn't realize what I said, but it sounded so great, I'm going to say it again, huge holes of opportunity, of virgin territory that is unexplored, where sex and science fiction combine. And there's a sort of amazing things that we can be doing that we're not seeing in science fiction in any way, shape, or form. In this particular category of sex with technology, we see no exploitation of the network, for instance. It's always sort of one-to-one. Why can't it be one-to-many, or many-to-many, or many-to-one, right? There's no reason why we can't do synesthetic things where you could, you know, take the signal coming, the traffic going to a website, and you could get really perverse, right? And take the traffic going to the 500 Club website and plug it into some sort of dildo machine or some sort of sex machine. And there's no reason why we can't, as data, then start experimenting with interesting things. Why can't a million people have sex together with these devices, right?
Although we did see that example on Thursday night about the earthquake-activated dildos.
Right, that's exactly right.
But, yeah.
Well, and again, we're seeing these things in our world. We're not seeing them in science fiction. And so the opportunity to do really interesting things in science fiction around sex is just waiting there to happen. Combining different kinds of experiences, real-time reporting of sex in terms of location and data, right? So why can't we be, are there ways to crowdsource or crawl sex data and turn that into some sort of learning about, I don't know, sexual activity or sexual mores or whatever is the zeitgeist of sex around the world or sex within a certain community. We haven't really seen a lot of data fetishes. We've seen the sort of iTrick thing that could support a data fetish, but, you know, there's a lot more data out there. If you plug this into Google and you could really have a data fetish. Sex with devices and transposing sensor signals from one thing to another. We're not seeing really any of this in science fiction, or just barely scratching the surface. And so there's a lot of room for experimentation that's just waiting to happen. So onward.
So the last section is actually, there's less stuff in it that we saw. Oh, here's more device likes and things that are going on in the real world. Such, I think you guys already talked about virtually Jenna, but she's a nice kind of example of VR partner. Again, sort of skirting the definitions we've got here. So pulling back out, the sort of last category that we've got is augmented coupling. And actually, when we were listening to the keynote today, I thought that this might be split out into augmented coupling and mediated coupling, but for now, they're sort of combined. What we mean by augmented coupling is any circumstance where two people are intentionally stimulating one another in some sense. And again, it sort of breaks out nicely into sort of the physical realm and the virtual realm. So let's dive into an example, a canonical, Barbarella. This one is not that interesting, but it's where Barbarella has pill sex with Dildano like they do on Earth, even though she's just learned sort of the physical way and really loves it. Dildano insists it, so they take the pill and they touch hands and they have sex. Not that sort of interesting, especially from a visual standpoint, because they just kind of sit there and it's funny that their ears are smoking. But a much more interesting thing comes from the same movie later when Barbarella is captured by Duran Duran. And in order to torture her, he sticks her in something he calls the machine, but which if you've seen it, you know it really should be called the sex organ. I love how the cinematographer is trying to sexualize the device, right? A slow pan.
Oh! Oh! What is this thing?
Interesting, my dear. Sonata for executioner and various young women.
Oh! It's sort of nice, isn't it?
Yes, it is nice. In the beginning. Wait until the tune changes. You may change your tune as well.
Oh, goodness. What do you mean?
All right, so if you haven't seen the clip, Barbarella actually outsexes the sex organ and causes it to crash. It's fantastic. Those little black bars mean that the application is running out of memory, so cross your fingers for the end of it. So the next one is actually the one sort of piece of technology that we saw in real porn. So Sex World from 1978 was a film that was building on the success of Westworld. And like most porn, it's really about the sex, and there's some excuse to get to the sex. But there's this one moment in the course of the film where, and I don't bother knowing their names, it's Sex World, where this kind of sad guy is being approached by his sex bot.
Can't do it myself. But I need help. Would you be my mama?
Your mama is dead, Ralph. Do I look like your mama?
Also something not to say during sex.
Where did the music come from? Did you do that?
What's the difference? It's here. Hold me.
Wow.
love it. So this is the only moment in science fiction that we've seen where the environment is sensitive to the activities that are going on and actually keys certain events that makes it more sexy. So that's another sort of, it's a physical thing, although you could argue that since it's, you know, kind of brain. Anyway, this moment is a really weird one. It is definitely sensual, maybe it's sexual, but it's the closest thing that we've seen in mainstream science fiction to teledildonics. For those of you who don't know, in Flash Gordon in 1980, Dale Arden and Flash Gordon and Zarkov have been captured and taken to Ming's throne room. Ming is somewhat taken with Dale, and so uses the power of his ring to, I guess, test her for fitness.
Come closer. No, not you.
Zarkov presumes he's the sex object.
Let us see you.
No.
Dale!
Don't. So I actually want to freeze it there, partially because what you're seeing is the interface. It's really sort of a beautiful thing. There's a light that says, hey, this thing is on. So we know that Dale's being controlled by this object. But second of all, it's a gestural interface. It's almost Minority Report, right? Although it's a camera trick, I'm not quite sure. I mean, you'd have to do it in front of your own eye in order to do it in real life. But it's sort of a really beautiful gestural interface for giving Dale this very sensual experience, even if it is beyond her control. One could imagine that once she got used to the idea, she might sort of welcome the moments with the ring.
Could you do it in front of a mirror?
Why? If somebody would build it here, we would find out. And we'd be happy to show a video of it. So now we've left sort of this physical realm behind, and we're going into two examples in the virtual realm. And this clip from Demolition Man in 1993, we actually see technology acting as a prophylactic of brain-to-brain sex. Here's John Spartan and Leanna Huxley. And Huxley has asked this man from the past to, hey, do you want to have sex? And he said, sure. And this is what happens.
Begin in a few seconds.
Begin what?
Having sex, of course.
So he kind of gets into it, but then eventually rejects it and says, you know, let's do it the old-fashioned way. And she resists, but eventually gives in, and of course becomes, like Barbara, like kind of a sex addict. The last example that we have for the whole thing is from Lawnmower Man. We actually, Annalise showed us this, and she had a better version. I think my audio is not quite synced. But if you weren't here for the opening party, this is Lawnmower Man, where culturally we were figuring out the promise of virtual reality, and we get this sort of ridiculous piece of film. Oh, my goodness. No, we don't. We clip back to Barbarella. That's broken. I can't fix it. I guess I could flip over, but it's not really worth it, and we're running a little long. Oh, yeah, this one. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, this is another Outer Limits episode. This one was called Skin Deep, and this is a really interesting example of sort of VR augmented sex, and this isn't VR sex in the sense of a holodeck. This is a camouflaging technology so that you can have sex with someone else as someone else, essentially. And it's used in, you know, again, there's some moral story at the end of Outer Limits in a case of mistaken identity and et cetera, because you have people running around having sex camouflaged as people that they're not. But it's a really interesting use of this technology and sort of fantasy fulfillment, and it's sort of the technological end to what you see today amongst, you know, people who wear certain costumes or fetishize certain costumes, or furries, for instance, that take on certain personas as part of their either sexual arousal or their fetishism, and it's taken to this technological extreme, and it was actually handled very interestingly.
And positively.
And positively.
This is the negative version, right? Wow, that thing shouldn't be screwing up memory near the end. Okay.
So the real-world examples here that we're seeing in augmented coupling are everything that you are probably already familiar with, the teledildonics, the pose balls from the Red Light Center and from Second Life, for instance. The one reference that we saw from the real world that we couldn't actually find a visual contact for was a guy by the name of Max Holden in the right around 2000, 2001, who had done a lot of work in sort of porn, was actually taking his porn money and using it to build a robotic exoskeleton or sort of control skeleton so that he was trying to turn himself into a sex bot, into a robot. And it was the point of this was not only to sort of turn him, sort of make himself a little bit more cyborg-like, but to turn control over to another person, his sexual partner, right? So he literally would become a control-less sex bot for the purposes of sex. Couldn't find Max Holden. We've been looking for months. Couldn't find even references. If it's in archive.org, we can't figure out the URL to look for. So we found it to be a really interesting example of this sort of sci-fi sex interface thing doing something really interesting and sophisticated, but can't show it to you, unfortunately. Again, most of the interesting examples are happening in the real world. They're happening here, a lot of them in San Francisco.
In this room, in
fact. And, you know, the lessons that we're seeing, this is obviously a good place. This is where the ultimate sexual arousal machine would sort of coincide with this domain and this model. We're seeing varying examples of sort of this treated healthily or positively or not. Again, science fiction tends to be a pretty mainstream medium, so very often we see in science fiction it's not treated very healthily. The clip from Demolition Man is a really good example where he's sort of horrified at what sex has become, and because this sort of augmentation is a bad thing, when where we are right now, here, we're experimenting with how to make it a good thing, how to make it some sort of an enhancing thing.
Which, if I can break in, I think is one of the key tensions that we have found, and why we don't see a lot of sex in cinema, something you can all guess, is that sex is a biological imperative, not a technological one. And we're also herd mammals, right, or tribal mammals. And that means that anything that deviates from the norm is suspect at the very least. And so anytime, like when John sort of put on the thing, he was like, wait, this isn't sex, and the audience was feeling sort of the same way.
Yeah, where can this go? Well, obviously, if you look at Second Life today, this is going a lot further here now than it's gone in science fiction. And the nice things about technologies like Second Life or similar kinds of explorations is they truly support creativity and creative interpretations of sex and sexuality, whereas we haven't really seen those in science fiction. We saw it a little bit in Lawnmower Man where people sort of morphed into animals and strange forms. But you don't get really, we haven't seen any of that elsewhere in science fiction, but you get that pretty much every day in the furry community and on Second Life, etc. We do see lots of possibilities here for things like, again, the one-to-many, many-to-many, many-to-one, whatever, augmented
time
sex.
Shifting,
time-shifting, recording of sex in various forms and then played back in different forms, mass group sex, licensing likenesses for avatar sex. So I'm sure that, Paris Hilton's just a couple days away from actually licensing herself to Second Life so that she can earn a lot of money. Some people who want to have sex with her,
oh,
right?
Like Jenna Jameson, yeah.
But overall, the lessons here are that sex is much more interesting and strange outside of sex science fiction than we're finding in science fiction, which was a really big surprise to us because it's actually the opposite of what we're finding in the rest of the Make It So research, where science fiction tends to be much more interesting and strange than sort of our humdrum everyday lives. Here it's just reversed. A little note, things like gesture recognition we think is a natural fit for sex interfaces. Hasn't really been explored much beyond Ming's ring. And then some overall lessons. The first one is probably that there is not enough sex in science fiction as far as we're concerned, as far as we've found, and there should be more. And hopefully everyone agrees with that. Technologists and hobbyists are advancing the state of the art, and the visions of what sex and science fiction can be a lot faster and a lot further than science fiction, which is usually the mechanism for doing this. And part of that may be the prudishness of sort of America and American cinema and what's acceptable in a mainstream film, but we're not really even seeing it in sort of independent film either, or sort of off on the edges of what cinema and film is, so we're just not seeing a lot of it. Part of it is probably because sex isn't really about the mechanism, and this is the theme that we've seen sort of, you know, you can do one little thing and suddenly someone's sexually aroused, or it can be a device and, oh, I got off, because it's just about mechanism. And we certainly saw that a lot in the sex world, Westworld 70s incarnations or intersections of sex and technology, where all you needed was a sex bot and you could get aroused and have sex. Sex is obviously a lot more than that. It's not just about the mechanism, and science fiction may just not be a really good medium for exploring that, simply because a lot of people go to mainstream science fiction to be surprised and titillated by weird and cool things and not really interested in visualizations that may be more subtle or, in fact, invisible because they're happening in terms of relationships.
So sort of one of the, like, if we had a takeaway here from our research into this stuff, it was really what Nathan said, is that the most interesting stuff is happening by do-it-yourselfers, not by Hollywood. And so that's awesome. Keep up the good work. And that there is even more sort of directions we can take. You know, we don't have artificial intelligence yet, so we can't really head into the sex bot world, but there sort of still are a lot of demos to be made out there that can sort of fill out the gaps in this grid.
Yeah. The last two lessons we've learned is that watching science fiction, and in this case watching sex and science fiction, can be beneficial to your career, so we encourage more of that.
Hey, look, we're at a conference.
And we're now available as consultants for heretofore unconceived sex-related interfaces for science fiction, because we have it all mapped out and we know where the virgin territory is.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so that's a talk. So we spent a lot of time, but we can't take questions.
No, it's fine, because our next speaker still needs a little bit of time.
Okay.
Slim, do you have a title yet? Do you have a title yet? Okay, well,
I'll make one up now.
Excellent. But we'll have a couple.
Okay.
We have a couple of more minutes for you to set up and prepare, and a couple of, so I guess there will be a couple of questions.
I find myself tempted to ask what I would call the Willie Sutton question. Willie Sutton was a famous bank robber, and they asked him how come he robbed banks, and he said, well, that's where the money is.
Mm-hmm.
In a similar vein, if you were researching machine sexuality, if that's what you were looking for, why not research it in pornography?
Well, we actually did, and the problem is that porn...
Yeah.
The point of it is the sex, not the interface. And there's not a lot of interface fetish out there, right?
Or there isn't yet. We did actually look through pornography, and you know, we're not experts in the entire body of work, but we went up on fora and message boards asking and soliciting recommendations of what to look at, and of the five or six things that we got back, they were truly horrid and really not about technology that was sort of patina. So if you have something to suggest, we'd love to look at it.
We'll talk. Yeah.
Okay,
good.
Oh, and another thing that we didn't look at is that, since our primary mission is to look at the field of narrative, we don't want to look at movies of people just filming other people having sex, even if it's robot sex. We don't care. Narrative is the thread that holds all of our research together. So that may have excluded a lot of films that otherwise might be included.
In other words, film didn't represent a narrative, even if it had the robot sex interface in it, you wouldn't be reporting on it.
Possibly. I mean, totally, give us later, and I'm sure there's lots of films that aren't on here that we'd love to hear about later that we can include.
Yeah, being in the what I guess would be defined as the fetish community, or more specifically the BDSM community, I can tell you directly that there are a lot of inspiration for some of the designer types, which is actually a small part of this large subculture, actually get their inspiration from sci-fi movies, such as barbed wire. I know people that are trying to design the barbed wire torture machine.
Okay. Was that a sexual torture machine, or is they just taking the aesthetics from it? Or was it a torture machine?
Well, like actually, they're, in your definition, it would probably be just taking the aesthetics of it.
Okay,
but it was certainly hot.
And certainly inspirational. Yeah.
Yes. Also, there are people like J.G. Leathers that have an entire what would be designated as a grope suit or a sim suit or, you know, however you want to define it. But he has developed an entire catalog of appliances that he wears in a suit that is intended to for sexual gratification and to be controlled by other people.
Fantastic. Do you know if that was inspired by anything in science fiction? Or is he just a cool go-getter kind of guy?
Okay. Yeah, that was cool. He was mostly inspired by some kickiness, but actually a lot of his stuff comes from the imagery you see in 1930 science fiction.
Cool. Big. Great. Great. Well, good morning. This hand went up a long time ago, and he's been fishing.
I'll run it over. This question is a bit of a hobby horse of mine right now, so I apologize if it's vaguely off topic, but you brought up the question of Second Life and representations and sort of virtual spaces and sexuality in virtual spaces and all the cool things that are happening in Second Life in terms of sort of non-traditional, non-mainstream implementations of sexual connections. I come kind of from way on the other side of the spectrum, and from my corner of the world, Second Life has developed a bit of a reputation for censoring and limiting any kind of sexual behavior that is perceived as sort of non-normal, non-mainstream, non-acceptable. And it's a curious question as to whether there's right or wrong sex in virtual environments. Like, is there bad sexual behavior in a purely virtualized space? And
right. It's
a question that's really been chewing around in my head quite a bit. And having brought up that Second Life example, I'm curious, in the larger context of your work, what you think about that.
Well, what are you finding is being termed inappropriate sexual behavior in Second Life?
Well, what initially happened, and this was about 6 months ago, is somewhere in the file trading subsystems of Second Life, somebody was passing around child porn images. And so that brought the heat, of course, because that's not good.
Yep.
And then when Second Life started poking around at those particular examples of clearly bad stuff, they found examples of people who had underage-looking avatars that were being sort of adultish in behavior.
Right.
They decided, well, that's not good either. Okay, I can see that. Then somebody wandered over to the furry community and saw all these sort of animalistic-type critters doing things that animals apparently aren't allowed to do in Disneyland, and that was banned as well.
During hours, they're not.
Yeah, exactly, except at night, yeah, when nobody's there. So it just sort of steamrolled, and then it kind of backpedaled a little bit, and then Linden Labs basically came up with a policy of not having a policy about this because they don't know what the hell to do. And it's a complicated question.
I think it is, and actually, I've had this conversation actually out of this context, and it is a little bit off topic, but I'm fascinated by it. But you mentioned that the sort of underage avatar is off limits. It's off limits because it's off limits in the real world. But if that behavior is stopping a pederast from assaulting a child, is it okay?
Yeah,
that's a question I don't know how to answer, but I think it's a substantive question. And it's going to get more relevant as these environments become more and more central. You can't imagine but that this is going to become, mm-hmm. I mean, in Saudi Arabia, are you allowed to have sort of same-sex avatars in the Saudi Arabian version of, you know, virtual environment.
Right.
Who decides what the rules are that's okay or not okay in a
virtual world where you're making the rules up, right? I mean, they're going to be grounded in our humanness. But I saw the documentary about Real Dolls where the guy was breaking open the casket and he pulled one of these dolls out for repair, and it had clearly been used as an abuse toy.
Right.
And I thought, rockin', if that's not happening to a real girl, great. Right. Let's ship them out to every abuser that's out there who doesn't have a consensual partner. And it touches on the same issues.
The movie Demon Lover addresses this issue kind of from an indirect perspective, that the concept of sort of virtualized torture porn is that, I mean, it sort of assumes that that's an intrinsically bad thing, and you really recoil from it, and then you go, okay, no, wait a minute, is this really, where do you draw that, are there any lines to draw here? You
know? The argument that I have heard is that if it reinforces the behavior in the real world, stop it. But
Understood. How
do we measure that? I don't know. It's a big, pithy, wonderful question.
And it's also a moving target, right? It's changing, it's fluid through time, it's ever-changing in the sense that we'll never have a good answer to it. It'll always be a moving answer.
And there was one other question.
In the back.
Okay. One final question because we have to move on to the next speaker.
How could you leave up weird science from your matchmaking?
Great. I forgot about the breast scene. Thank you very much. And that is just mea culpa. Oh, she was asking, how did we leave off Weird Science? In a marvelous, do you remember the story? I don't have to remind you. Two teenagers get the opportunity to create their own sort of sexual fantasy. And they have an interface where there's a funny moment where you've got the virtual representation of the woman and they have a slider where they make her breasts gigantic and ha-ha laugh and then shrink and then they make the real woman and they're actually quite huge there. We should have an email address if anyone wants to send us more stuff.
Is such a brilliant presentation and no email address on
it? Just
send me an email at nathan@nathan.com. We'll get to it. And the URL for all this stuff will be at nathan.com/AE as well. And, you know, this is the beginning of our research. This is sort of a sub-piece of the larger research that we just sort of started last year. So we're really looking for feedback and we're looking for more examples. Yep. By no means have we found them all.
Yep. Thank you, guys.
So, yeah. Big, okay. Mark, what?
Nathan.com. At Nathan.com.
Yes.
Okay. A big applause for Nathan and Chris.
Thank you.